So today is Tuesday, November 21st, 2017. I'm Leslie McCartney, the curator of the Oral History Collection at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And we're here today with Renee Blahuta. Is that how you pronounce your name, Renee? Thank you very much. And we're in Renee's beautiful home just outside of Fairbanks. And I really want to thank you for wanting to record your memories of your life and your life story with us. We kind of chat a little bit before we started about what we're going to do, so I'm going to let you take it away. If you could just, first of all, tell me where you were born and the date you were born, and then we'll go in and talk about your life growing up and your parents.
Okay. Well, I was born in Linz, Austria. And all the towns in Austria, it's a very old and historic town. It's a town that is at an important point in early traffic to Bohemia, along the river. And the river traffic was important.
And that was the Danube River.
And the Danube River. And my parents, it was kind of an accident that I grew up in Linz, because my grandparents and parents grew up in, or lived in Vienna.
So that's both your father's parents and your mother's parents lived in Vienna?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And my father was born in 04 and my mother 05. But the First World War changed everything. You know, it was the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And everything collapsed. And so it was kind of a, there were so many other changes.
What did your grandparents do in Vienna? What was their occupations?
Well, I can't.
Okay, sorry. Okay.
There were so many changes in the automobile. And sometimes I think more important, the aspirin. Because there was nothing people could do before, so it changed everything. But like my father grew up in Vienna, but his mother and siblings, older siblings, also lived in Vienna. However, his mother must have had an affair, because she went to what is now Slovakia and gave birth there under a different name, Coleman. My maiden name. Mm-hmm. And then she returned, you know, to Vienna again.
Wow.
But she had, my father had several older siblings, and I really don't know how many. I know he had a sister that married a British fella. There were a lot of British soldiers in Austria. So I've met her after she came to visit after the war. So, you know, everything changed. So, my father, to live in Vienna, those circumstances, food was not easy to find in a big city. And I'm sure that he was in black market. But from what I understand is he made good friends with stables, with Lipizzan's stablemasters, and he was able to take the the carriage out. This is just something that came down in the family. Yeah. And in well, 1917, 18, it must have been 1919, he got a notice to go into what was then was Yugoslavia. Now it's different. Yeah. That he was drafted. And so he went.
And he's only about 18?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was sitting, he was with other people, and he didn't understand anybody, and he was in the barracks, and nothing went on as days passed. And he walked out of it. And he walked over the Karawanken mountain range in what he told us. He had dress shoes with white spetsley. Because he was already quite a ladies' man. Yeah. But he walked over the big mountain range back into Austria. And when he came down to the Austrian border, he had to be very careful, because if he would have been caught by the Austrian police, he would have been returned.
Right.
But anyway, he made it back. And in the meantime, my grandmother lived in Sievering. It's now part of Vienna, but then it was still separate. Oh. And a very old community, going back to 1620 or so. Mm-hmm. And anyway, her parents, my great grandparents. Well, she was a widow, and she wouldn't let my grandmother marry. She didn't like the husband she chose, and she wanted her daughter to take care of her. So she was pretty old by the time she was able to marry.
Right.
But she married a builder. They did not have architects then. So everybody was just a builder. And my father pointed out the buildings that he built. And, you know, with all the gargoyles and very impressive.
Wow. And these were mostly in Vienna?
Yeah, in
that area.
In that area. That I know of. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And he, like I said, he married my grandmother. And they spent half the year in Hungary during the summer month, growing Tokay grapes. And she said that's when she learned how to smoke, because she and the boys that were living around, so they were in the fields, and they smoked something or other and pulled legs out of grasshoppers. But anyway, it's our business in Auster just collapsed, and he had invested in stock market, and he
lost
everything. And so he said he couldn't keep up with their lifestyle. So either would you like to live in Hungary or in Austria? And she said, Austria. Thanks goodness. Mm-hmm. So he also had invested in a hotel in Linz. And so they moved to Linz, and I found a letter amongst stuff that the woman that he had to take care of the hotel, someone wrote that she wasn't a good manager, and so he let her go and took over. But it was an old-fashioned house. It was in a, you know, the wonderful thing, it has those 6 feet deep walls, mm, and Renaissance ceilings with and but had on the second floor they had where people checked in, and then one of the rooms, so the story goes, they had a kitchen. And I never can understand how that worked out, okay. And anyway, my grandmother, she had 2 kids, and her sister got an ear infection, mm, and she died of the ear infection. Mm. Yeah. Dear, dear. And my mother said she overheard the parents talk, and they wished that if one had to die, that it would have been her. Oh. I don't believe that. Okay. But you never should listen to stories like that.
Oh, dear.
But,
Mr. May?
Yes?
Sorry to interrupt.
We'll stop. Okay.
So, now did we stop?
Well, the little, your mother's,
yeah, yeah,
brother, I take it, was it a brother or
no,
a sister?
A sister.
A sister who died, yeah, of an ear infection.
Anyway, so the maid I have photographs of the house. They settled there. And it wasn't long afterwards that my grandmother died. Mm. And I don't know whether it was a stroke or whether it was heart disease or but so it was only my grandfather. And in the meantime, like I said, business in Vienna was bad. So he already, he was such a good salesman for something or other that he had a motorcycle. And he drove to Linz because they heard that it was better in country towns. And so he arrived, and when he saw my mother, he probably thought that was a pretty good deal. Anyway, they eloped and got married. That's what, and barely a year later, my sister was born.
So what year did they marry then?
In 27.
27, okay. So your sister's comes along in 28 then.
Yes. And I was born in 32. Mm-hmm. And so my sister was 4 years old. It's a big difference.
Yes, when you're little. And your sister was Ruth, correct? Yes, okay.
So, and my grandfather died in 32, just before I was born. Mm. But my parents were everything new. So they moved. The check-in part in the first on the first floor, and on the second floor. The second floor had been at one time a big ballroom, and and they divided that in an apartment for us, for everybody. And you know, everything comes around again. They had the ladies' room, the master room, the children's room, and I tell you, we had that huge, huge room for ourselves with mahogany furniture, because mahogany and everything was modern.
And really high ceilings.
It's high ceilings, yes.
And those massive doors on mm-hmm. everything. Yeah.
Well, we had the doors in our apartments. They were out of glass, but that's very heavy glass mm-hmm. that you shave figures in.
Yes, beveled glass.
Yeah, I don't Leaded know what to call it. Yeah. But I could always see Santa Claus comes.
So what did your father do then, Renee? What was his occupation?
My father's occupation?
Mm-hmm.
He and my mother were innkeepers.
Oh.
Yeah. They moved there. Yeah,
and that's what
and,
they...
And we had... the downstairs was really a several restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And in that one restaurant, he had a local artist paint the ceiling, which was just, and you know, it's amazing. You know, we always see those painted ceilings, the things that's always famous artist. It's amazing what people can do, you know. And then he had the whole, everything was carved wood stairs, chairs and stuff like that. And he made he had an advantage that he knew so many people in Vienna, which really was a small town. And he was able to get cheap, good wine. And, you know, that came by truck in barrels. And then you had to siphon it with a water hose into our cellars.
Oh.
And we had three very deep cellars, and they were in rock. So if the Danube flooded, it flooded from the top, mm-hmm. and never from the bottom.
Right.
So, and at one time, the building was used by stagecoaches, mm. you know. And so they always had the horses in the dark. You know, that's, and so that was converted into a coal cellar and,
right.
and garages. Yeah. And maybe it was so modern.
For the time.
Had a gas station in front.
Oh.
Mobile gas. And had garages for our guests.
Wow.
So that was what it looked like, what it was like when the 30s really were quite good for us because we had the cheap wine. And we heard everything, you know, what was going on, because people gossiped, right. talked them into drink.
Yeah. So people would come and they would stay then? Like at the hotel, they would stay?
The hotel, stay yes. at the hotel, four floors.
Four floors. And would these be people like who were coming for long extended stays, or
no,
was it road trips?
We lived in the theater district. So lots of actors and actresses and salespersons too.
That must have been very colorful. Very colorful guests.
I have a guest book for some of them.
Really? Wow.
And I also know every owner of the building.
Yes. Wow. So how old was the building then? Do you know?
1594.
And was this the building that you once told me was a monastery?
It used to be a place that the monks had. And I don't know when exactly. I think it was during most of Austria was Protestant. And then they decided that it's going to be Catholic. They split it up.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. What year was that?
I don't know.
1600s or
it was. I think of the word.
Okay.
Sometimes I can't think of the right word. But it was throughout Europe that they decided whether they were going to be Lutheran or.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it must have been a very large building.
Yes.
If it was a monastery at one time.
Yes. And before then, I have a print, and it shows the Watergate. Mm. And that, to me, it looks like that was right there, too.
Yeah. So was it laid out like the typical European monastery buildings, kind of in a square with a courtyard in the middle, or?
No.
No, okay.
No. Well, it had a courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
So I never considered it typical.
Okay.
Huh. I know we had also beautiful, the hallways were open.
Mm-hmm.
And, just gorgeous.
Yes.
And we had all the rooms had double doors, pocket doors.
Yes.
So, because it had to stay warm.
Right.
But.
So as a child, did you get to play in all these hallways and rooms, or were you pretty well confined to your parents' residence?
Well, I wasn't supposed to.
Oh. Okay.
But they called me Quicksilver.
No.
But, we had a wonderful childhood. We had the Danube, and if the Danube was low, my sister and I, we were going along the walk, and that was dry. And I remember one time, because we had such great fun, there must have been a butcher, and all those heads of goats or whatever, they were washed up. And we pried loose the teeth. It was fun.
Yeah.
But
and did you go to school in that there then?
No, that was before.
This is before you were school age, right?
Yeah.
Little.
And we had. Everybody knew us in the neighborhood, and everybody watched out for us. It's just, these were the Carmen kids, and so we had nannies, but and the nanny had to sleep in a little bitty room behind our huge bedroom. And just with a curtain. You can't imagine it.
Mm-mm.
And there was a tall window, they could look in our room.
Mm-hmm.
But no comfort, at all.
And it was a full-time, round-the-clock nanny. It wasn't a person who just came in the day or
something. No. And that changed quite often.
Oh.
Because I remember one that I didn't like at all. That took me to a playground. In the theater district, in their parks. And she talked with another woman, and she said she couldn't talk. That wasn't permitted. And I thought I would have liked to play with that other kid, but that wasn't allowed. And she didn't stay long because she wasn't very good looking. Well, then if you had a good looking one, she wouldn't stay long because my mother.
Oh. Your mother was jealous.
She had good reason to watch out.
Oh.
So, anyway.
So they must have been very enterprising people, your parents, if they had a
absolutely.
Gas station. Like they saw opportunity and then
absolutely.
Capitalized on it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. It's, you know, putting in a elevator.
Wow. Into an old 1500s
yes,
building.
Yes. Found a Roman coin.
Wow.
Because we were Roman.
Right. So when they came to the building, it already been fitted with electricity and some plumbing then?
I don't know what plumbing's ahead.
Okay.
And plumbing was pretty hard to come by.
Right.
We got plumbing, but still only had one common toilet
mm-hmm.
every floor.
Right.
So, and a bathroom, which was new.
Mm-hmm.
And then they renovated what used to be the kitchen. And furnished it with mahogany furniture and, you know, all the single beds pushed together. Nothing wide. You had to go in the country.
Right.
Bye-bye. And they built, they tiled a bath tub
wow.
in the, right in that.
Wow. So it must have been a pretty posh place to stay for its day.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Huh.
And then, you know, everybody followed my father, his older brother and whatever. And he must have gotten into trouble with some political party or other. So my father hired him as a... you know, he could fix everything, but...
Like a caretaker, repairman. Mostly,
well, his main business was polishing shoes because everybody left their shoes at the door.
Right.
Yeah. So, those were the early years, but my father... my parents, sometimes they took us to Vienna. And the Maria Hilfestraße, that was the street where they had the cash, you could get new cash register.
Oh.
And elevators, you know, same elevators firms that still exist.
Mm-hmm.
And but you went up in... glass cages, you know, with wrought iron.
Wow.
And you know, the salesmen were all in suits and it was a big deal.
Yes, yes. Huh. Beautiful.
So, yeah, I could talk for hours about it.
Uh-huh, yeah. But a very happy childhood.
You know, I always knew that my parents, both of them, loved me and would do anything for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Our kids, you know, they couldn't do any wrong. We could. I was spoiled.
So So how long did you live there then, Renee? How long did your parents have the, were the innkeepers there?
No.
This is the 30s.
Well, it was the 30s, yeah. But I lived there until I got married.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about how the 30s came into the 40s and the political landscape started to change.
Like I said, the 30s was really pretty good. Mm-hmm. And we got all the, but we got all the gossip. And as I had in the 30s a small reward. And, but I don't remember anything about it, and my parents never talked about it. But I bet they knew all the people.
Right. And this was a revolt within Austria itself?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that either.
And the Nazis started to infiltrate. And for instance, we had a big store that sold everything, you know, Krauss and Schober. Well, sounds Jewish.
Yes.
Yes. So we are. The Nazis actively put out leaflets against that business. And if someone showed too much resistance, they were killed.
And was it known they were killed, or did they just disappear at night?
Most of the times they knew.
They knew.
And, but it always was, you know, someone hidden in a mountain, or it was a very, very strange period. I read about it a lot, but I never really was affected by it.
And you're a child, so
I was a child.
Don't see this happening. Were your parents and their group talking about these things happening?
You know,
said they were gossiping?
My parents never called each other by the first name. They were Mrs. Coleman and Mr. Coleman.
So.
I've never, ever heard.
Wow, very old-fashioned.
Well, you know, it was Mama and Papa, not Father. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that wouldn't do. No, that's, you had to keep. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my mother was Viennese, and she was elegant. And the people in Linz didn't know what to make out of it. You know? She was like a foreign bird.
Yeah, because Linz was not a big place at that time, and Vienna would have been the height of the cultural activities, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So, well, people drove on a left side of the road like the British. I went to school, sir.
In Linz?
In Linz. And I was sent to a teacher's college.
Even as a little child?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a school where people are learning to become teachers then, and they had students. Okay.
Well, I fell in love with that teacher. Our first grade teacher was absolutely fabulous. You know, we had to sit like this. Well, he could tell when we got a little bit itchy.
Had to sit prim and proper all the time.
And so he would bring out a violin, plays a violin. When a string broke, he gave a string to a student. It was just... Or he had handcuffed rattles. And he would rattle.
Like then, musical rattles. Yeah.
Huh. And he would bring in a cake and slice it, and we all learned how to divide. And I mean, we learned, we really did learn a great deal. Or he brought in nuts, you know, and told you whatever. But most of the time, you know, he always knew when we needed that he had to change. And we learned Greek lettering.
Greek lettering?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I still can read it.
Yes. Great. Read Greek. Yes. Yeah.
So, like I said, I loved it. We had a priest for Catholic education, religious. And he always presented that it was history that a kid could understand. So that was my first year. And, you know, you had to go and have a backpack.
And how old are you in your first year in school in Austria? Are you six or seven?
I think it was closer to seven,
right?
Because I missed, I was born in June.
So that had a really big impact on you for your first year of education.
Oh, never since. But, you know, we had a gym that we could swing from ropes and do everything else, and I loved that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was several miles each morning to walk there.
And you walked by yourself, or did your sister take you, or?
No, my sister was already in a different school.
Mm-hmm.
So, no one, it was safe.
Right.
It was safe, yeah. You know. And I could see... Well, we had to go past the parish church. Then around the corner there were a couple of private, big, I don't know what they were. And then on the other corner was a paper store with pencils in it. I loved it. And then they had a jail on the opposite side. And I guess if you got into jail, you never got out. It was an awful-looking place. And then you came out to a beautiful museum. And opposite of that was the Austrian soldiers, and so there was a red and white striped little hut out there, and there was that soldiers, and in the evening, if it was getting dark, as a fella came along and lit the gas lamps, and in the morning they would dampen it. So there are all the things to see.
Yeah. And so how many students were in a class then? Were they very small classes when you went to school?
I think maybe 18.
Okay. And all local, so you knew the children from locally, or were they?
They were local, and most of them were from higher bürgerlich families.
Higher social class families, yeah. Right. And so was this still the same type of circle that your parents were in?
No. My parents were way above.
Oh, were they? Way above that. Right.
But so, it was each month, I don't know how often, they went to Vienna, and they always brought something back for us. Mm-hmm. And like I said, one time, they brought a salmon-colored coat with a salmon-colored dress beneath it, with little frock closures,
right,
and a chateau with a tassel.
Oh, wow.
I went to school with it. Mm. I was like a pheasant. And I still love that dress. I just
the best dressed pupil in the school, right?
Well, it wasn't said I was the best dressed. Uh-huh. I just was different.
Right.
But I do know, you know, that I didn't make really friends with any of the kids, but we had that one kid in class that couldn't hold water. Mm-hmm. And I felt so sorry for her, and I tried to make friends with her, mm-hmm, because she couldn't, you know, and the others made fun of her. But anyway, that was the first year, and everything changed after that.
Because your first year would have been just before the Second World War officially started.
Well, you could tell that things
were not,
were happening, but didn't affect us, you know. And
during this time, were your parents getting any sort of pressure from the Germans as to what type of guests they could have?
No, was before the Nazis came.
Okay.
They were active in a place.
Mm-hmm.
But our best patrons that we liked in a hotel were the British.
Oh, really?
Because they were wonderful travelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they adjusted to, you know, they were world travelers. And consequently, if you had a different customer, that was just fine. And we always gave, for like breakfast, a British breakfast.
Right.
But yes, we really liked the English.
So what started to change after your first year of school? What were the changes that you started to sense?
The second year, I still went there.
And did you have the same teacher, Renee? Or did they change the teacher?
The teacher that I had was gone.
Mm.
I don't know what happened to him. Mm. And then we learned Latin writing. By a fellow that thought everything was just fine. He liked. And I didn't like him. So that was the second year. But because we had those restaurants, and every place always had a Stammtisch.
A Stammtisch? What is a Stammtisch?
That is a niche or a big table with chairs where you always had the same people coming and spend some time.
Right.
And you get all the gossip. And they played cards.
Okay.
So, but I knew, you know, that something was happening. I didn't know what that one day, and that was when Hitler, when it was Anschluss. And we saw tanks after one tank after the other.
Coming into Linz.
Coming right in front of the Danube. Oh. Right in front of the hotel.
Wow.
And of course I was in the midst. I wanted to see what was going on.
And what were your parents saying at the time?
My parents were having business, and they're having all the other people that were excited talking about it. Mm. And so someone said you had to have red candles in the windows. And my mother said, no, and you stay here. And I went to the main square where Hitler stood on a balcony. And I didn't understand a word he said because he had a horn, you know, it was before him. And, but the whole place was full of Nazis and a lot of SS. Mm-hmm. And every couple of minutes I said, Heil. I've been scared for, I still can't stand crowds. Mm. It scared me.
Yeah.
And
and what did the red candles in the window represent? What was that to mean?
I guess support. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
I don't know.
Support for Hitler.
Yeah.
So as a child, seeing that, that must have been, like you say, really traumatic.
Yeah. Huh. And, you know, we had a balcony at the hotel. And I don't know what happened, but someone ran up there, and he had a little sparkler, like for New Year's Eve. And he was excited, and they came and got him. And they didn't arrest him, but never, ever.
Wow.
It must have been the second day or so. We had a couple of head waiters with black tails, you know. And one's name was Gustav, and the other's name was Fritz. And Gustav stayed with us, and the other one I've never seen again after that first day. So I don't know whether he was Jewish or whether he, you know, I just don't know, but he was gone. Just like that.
Yeah. Did this make you feel really insecure, like one day your parents could be gone, or as a child?
No. Come to that. One of the first things, busy office, busy in a bank business, and I'm not supposed to be there. Well, my sister, all she wanted was paint, and she was an artist, so she wasn't interested in any of that stuff. But I was there. And my father would pick me up, and I would step on his hands, and he would lift me up. And so I was in there, in the restaurant, and a fella came up, and he was really, really excited, and he said, "They're going to take away my child." And, from what I overheard, evidently his child was ill. And I told myself that I had the measles and chicken pox and whooping cough. I mean, I had everything.
Right.
Said, am I going to be next? Mm. And that is something that you never, ever forget. Mm-hmm. It scared me.
Right.
And so there was a Mercedes coming down. I have to show you a picture. You can one road, and on a corner it blew the horn. It was a very funny horn. Mm-hmm. And my father said we shouldn't look out the window. No, we did anyway. Mm-hmm. And see it pass. But it went up a couple of miles, and there was a castle. Every 5 minutes in Austria, it's a castle.
Yes.
And the elderly and kids, like handicapped ones, they're guests here. But the elderly, you could not see in the car, but they could see out. Mm. But the vents there, you were told just to take a shower, and you were gassed, and if not, then you got a shot.
Right.
But it was always a physicians from town.
It was the physicians from town?
Yes, that we are there in church.
Huh.
And that you could get it, I never could understand it, okay? But we knew all that.
You knew this was happening.
We knew this was happening because we overheard a lot. And we never were supposed to talk. And it was like being the fly on the wall. So we were very aware of it, and my mother had invited business people in groceries business and business to come, and she never did that. I think what they did is they wanted to get support, that the food has to keep on coming.
Right.
And I had to go and dance at the Dying Swan.
You were in ballet school at this point. Was this ballet school on top of regular school?
Yes.
Yes, it was totally extracurricular. Yes.
So, but that I don't think that ever happened much. It's about too provincial. But well, you know, my father, after this motorcycle, you know, he always wanted cars. And the first car that I could remember was a silvery thing, and so tiny that my sister was cramped in, and I had to sit on my mother's lap. But you know, it's not that much different than if you go and look at the automobile museum, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And then the Mercedes-Benz dealer in Linz was ill. And he asked my father to take care of his widow. Mm. And he died. And immediately she was arrested and taken to concentration camp, taken off. Now, they had within weeks they already found a place to build have a concentration camp built. And they asked people, Tor people. And when I say Tor for Germany, of Austria, mm-hmm. you know, because my father was Tor, mm-hmm. and I never thought he was Tor after it. Yeah. My husband was. So, anyway. And so my father knew a lot of the people that worked on that concentration camp.
And they were building it? They, mm-hmm. When you said working, they were building it.
They got a rock quarry. Mm. That was the first one. Mm-hmm. And anyway, you know, people said, well, you should join the SS and because you're tall. And then others said, you should go and join the civilian arm of it, mm. you know. And anyway, when that happened, when she was arrested, he was good at bribing. He bribed... he got her out of there.
Why did they want to arrest and put her in a concentration camp? Was she Jewish?
Yes.
Or she was Jewish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so she was under house arrest. Mm-hmm. She had a house and with a garden. And you know, people at that time, if they had had a good rapport with one of their employees, mm-hmm. they stayed for life.
Mm.
And she had an employee that stayed with her.
Mm.
And but as far as the Nazis were concerned, she was dead. No food stamps, no nothing. And so my parents applied, and so all the years. And She came and visited you.
Oh, wonderful. But she wouldn't have been able to leave her house for years or
for years,
see she people.
Didn't, she didn't. She could do nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So being in a prison in your own home, really.
Yeah, but it was...
But she was alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we supplied her.
And your father and your mother really, that was a dangerous thing for them to be doing. Was it not?
Yes.
Yes.
So...
Were there others that they also helped and supplied food or goods to, or was that primarily the only lady?
Well, like, my mother always was really elegant.
Mm-hmm.
And one time we were in Vienna, and we went, she didn't have her furs or anything. No! You're a bad baby.
Cat. So you were in Vienna and you didn't have what, Renee? You
said? She was had a plain coat.
Had a plain coat, didn't coat. Have furs on.
No furs.
No furs.
And we went in a part of town that I didn't recognize, and really was a very few... stores, and they had their shutters down.
Hmm.
And so we walked, and then another woman came, and they did something, you know, like when you bump mm-hmm. into something, you go back and forth.
Yes.
And something changed hands.
Hmm.
And as soon as that happened, we turned around and we left. And I asked what that star was that that woman wore,
mm-hmm.
because it was the Star of David.
Oh, right.
And I don't know what took place there, but I do know that, you know, every hotel had a room 13 that wasn't rented out.
Right.
And in our case, it was a small, little, not much bigger than a broom closet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we kept Frau Zimmer. Now, Zimmer is a little room. And I thought for years that it was just because we didn't know what else to call her.
Mm-hmm.
And she only came out at night.
Okay.
But amongst stuff I found, we found, was a letter of her father asking my husband to take care.
Your father?
No. Her father.
Her father asking your father?
Her father.
Right.
To take care of her.
Oh, my heavens.
And so she lived there, but after the bombing, after one of the bomb raids, she was gone. Oh, I didn't remember seeing her or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what happened, but I do know my sister told me, I didn't know, that one of our employees blackmailed my father.
Mm.
And, but he bought her off because she was much better off.
Wow. Good heavens. Wow.
But anyway, so the Nazis invaded Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said to my father, you either join the German army or you're going to be executed as a combatant.
Right.
So that was a choice.
Right. There is no choice, really.
Well, he...
And what year would this have been? 1940s?
Yeah.
Yeah. Early 1940s, because the war officially started in 39.
Yeah.
Right.
And then immediately.
Yes.
Anyway, he worked for a colonel that...
Did your cat want out? Oops, hold on, Renee. I'll just turn this off. Okay, so we're back again. So the your father had basically been conscripted into the German
army. And he had a colonel who was with the Austrian army and again had to become work for the Nazis. And he was in resistance. Mm-hmm. And so he and my father got along well. And my father had a motorcycle again. And he went all over Austria collecting information. And my mother was very good at forging signatures. And my sister must have had a talent, okay, said my sister and her just but she forged leaf.
Now, while your father's in the army, is your mother still running the hotel?
Mm-hmm. And my father came around all the time.
So it wasn't like he was sent far away then?
No, he had totally free. He just collected.
And this is information, like what kinds of information was he collecting? Do you know?
I have over here a document that thanks the Austrians that were in the resistance. And they didn't give any names. They just said, now that the war is over, the only names they gave were those that were died in concentration camps. Mm. And so... that he was in resistance, okay. Mm-hmm. It's hard to understand for people. They understand it if you say resistance. Mm-hmm. If you say he was a spy, that thinks it's awful.
Yeah. He was not there willingly. Right.
But by then the tourists were gone. The hotel had pifkes. You know what pifke is?
No. What's pifke?
It's a derogatory term for Germans.
Oh. So they were staying in the hotel.
Yeah, I had to look it up.
Right.
What it meant.
Okay. I've never heard it before.
But, that's the pifkes.
Wow.
And, they took over when they wanted rooms or whatever. Just everything changed, like I said.
And forgive my ignorance, but was Linz bombed much then, by the Germans or?
Linz had like I said, Hitler loved it.
Mm-hmm.
He build a new bridge, the Nibelungen Bridge. Mm. You know, the Nibelungen, mm-hmm. you've heard about it. And he built new buildings, and he had kind of an idea. He wanted to make a city like Budapest. He liked Budapest out of Linz. Huh. And he also, we like to do if, let's say, if you have a historic building and DOT wants to build a road, all of a sudden it's not historic anymore. Okay? Mm-hmm. I have a book. They issued a book with all the buildings they were going to tear down. And who the owners were. Wow. But so, like I said, my husband always checked, and we were carpet bombed. The whole town was carpet bombed because we had so much industry that Hitler started. Steel industry.
So he wanted it to be a city that he wanted, but he didn't want the industry there.
No, he wanted the industries there.
Okay.
But we didn't want to have it.
Right, right.
No, we were carpet bombed.
Okay.
And George McGovern was one of the pilots that flew one of those, flew those bombing missions.
Wow.
And he, in his memoirs, said, you know, to see that carpet bombing and the poor people. Mm. And that made him a pacifist. So, of course, like I said, I had to read some memoirs to find all this out.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, you're a child, right?
Well, no one would know anyway.
Right.
But, so, it's, but we were carpet bombed both by first, you know, from people coming from England, and then from Italy later on. And we also had Russians bombing us. And I always wonder whether this was some of those that we trained here. I don't know anything about those.
Hmm. And what about food shortages? Did you suffer food shortages then during this time?
There was no food anymore.
Right.
You know, that's why it was hunger. Mm-hmm. Even everything was rationed. And you could not... Everything is black market. But if they caught you, you were executed. Mm-hmm. And of course, I didn't have any more school. I had to go to a different school, which I had to go up from the Danube River up 120 steps. Count it. And then still half an hour or so to that school. And it was totally different. I just absolutely hated it.
How was it different from the school that you loved? What were the differences that made you hate it?
The atmosphere. Then I had to learn how to knit. And I had some pink yarn, and it was gray by the time I got to took it home, and my mother would rub it on the floor and tried to make it. She made a few rolls, you know. And then some of the kids had lice. And the teacher went around with a pair of needles and checked. I got some. I had to wash my hair with petroleum. Mm-hmm. And my mother had to comb it out. But the embarrassment of the whole thing and everything. And since I had a crazy Senfus Cannon come and talk about how wonderful Hitler was. Mm-hmm. That was our cash.
Were they trying to indoctrinate you into the Hitler Youth program?
Oh. They made my daughter, my sister went to one of them. And they beat her. Because that was the only time she came, because they told her. And my father interfered, and she never had to go anymore. Well, I was kind of curious myself. So I went to one of my age. And they were going, and we didn't have any rifles, but you go right and you go left, and kind of marching. Me? Phew! That was the last one.
That was the last one you went to. So they didn't force you to go to them?
They would have, if it wouldn't have been for my father.
So how he sounds like an amazing man, that he knew how to somehow get his family out of these very dangerous situations, or he knew people who could do that.
Listen, I know he was in jail one time. I don't know for what he was in jail, but he got out of it. That is because he had all the people in town that were anything in a restaurant. At one time before, whatever. Right. You know. And so and he listened, but he never ever talked. And he never played a visible role.
So always behind the scenes.
For instance, when General Patton came, he wasn't supposed to go to Austria. He was supposed to, he went to Czechoslovakia, and then he was supposed to go, gosh, I don't know where, but he was so close to Austria, so he just went into Austria. And he freed the people from the concentration camps. But, and you know, he was always said to save the Lipizzan horses. And he did. But who was the fellow that found a place for the Lipizzan horses to stay for 5 years? My father.
Wow.
So he had those.
All those connections.
Yeah.
Before, earlier, you were saying that they built a concentration camp in a gravel pit. Was that close to where you lived then?
Yes.
And what was the name of that concentration camp?
Mauthausen.
It wasn't
a gravel pit.
Oh.
It was a rock.
A quarry.
Quarry. And they made people go up and then toss them down and carry rocks up. People were, it's unimaginable what those people did. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't big enough, so they had sub-camps. And they built sub-camps, and they built underground camps. And
did you ever see any of these people in these camps? Did you ever go near them?
No.
No.
After the war, my father took me to Mauthausen. Mm-hmm. And I still could, you could still smell the reek.
Yeah.
It was awful. And years later, we were in Austria and we had a friend with us and he wanted to go and see it. I didn't want to go in. Mm-hmm. And it was, I could see from the outside already, said it was all sanitized, you know. And No.
Gosh. But like you said, people knew that this was happening.
You know, people deny it. Mm-hmm. But they must have been really stupid. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as long as it didn't affect them, mm-hmm. they didn't care. Mm. It's a... First thing, like I said, they did is... I remember before they even had the concentration camp, Groningen had only had that castle. Every town has a bag lady. Mm-hmm. And we had that bag lady. And from what I understood is that she was born with syphilis. Mm-hmm. And so she went around and didn't. She was tolerated by everybody. And then there was the World War I veteran that had lost his legs, that was collecting arms. They were gone. And it's at the main square, there was a mom and pop shop that had bright furniture. You know, everything was really spick and span and really nice. And they had the nicest pencil boxes and journals and diaries and all that stuff that I loved. And my sister did too, you know, she got paint and she did. And they were so helpful and just great. And one day I got on the main square and all the furniture were broken on the front of the house and you know, they were gone. Mm. And it's those things. I thought later on now, you know, I thought, was that the Kristallnacht or whatever? No, that was way before. Mm.
So as a child seeing this, what emotions went through you? I mean, it must have been...
Well, your kids are resilient, you know. Mm-hmm. It just becomes the norm.
Right.
It's just... You can't do anything about it, but they still had, it's my parents that always were there, mm-hmm. and just knew, you know. Well, towards the end of the war, we knew sooner or later we were going to be killed, you know, because... If the Nazis didn't manage it. But there are so many things that happened that no one ever wrote about, that I just got glimpses. You know, for instance, when they tried to assassinate Hitler, the Austrian resistance that never did anything, they weren't like the French or anything, they never met, somebody always talked, okay. But they sprung into action and they had it all the support and all planned out. But the only ones that survived were those that had their own lines of communication and that they didn't share with anybody else. Hmm. And we had one officer and two adjutants staying for one night. And I don't know, but they stayed in our apartment. And I don't know anything about it. You know, I just know that they were there.
Right, yeah.
And that the time frame was right.
So the war is going on and your father's in the resistance. But you said he was home a lot.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like I said, he had totally free.
Wow. Expect somebody to be shipped off and not see them again. You don't think of them staying.
Huh. Well, you know, we were bombed, and it tore down. It was a dud. Mm. You know, the bombs were not as well built as nowadays.
Right.
So we were out of town, and we used the binoculars and the place was still standing. Everything was all right. But he got there, and there was a bomb, you know, that had torn down four floors.
Of the hotel?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so he picked up the dot, went across the road, and threw it in the Danube. I bet it's still there.
Right. Oh, my heavens. Huh.
So, and, you know, at the end of the war, he said, oh, the Nazis started to take the people from concentration camp and put them on death marches, you know, from all kind of different directions. Mm-hmm. And he passed them, and he said, when one couldn't step fast enough, they just shot them and hit them. So at the end of the war, he deserted again.
Good heavens.
He picked up civilian clothing and went to where we had our cabins out of town. And he forgot to bring socks. And he couldn't imagine
wearing his shoes without his socks.
Yes. So he had my mother's silk stockings.
No. Very funny.
But, you know, there's so many stories like that. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing.
Where did you have a cabin out of town then? Where was that located?
Well, see, I, in fifth grade, I got ill. And a lot of several of our employees were ill too, and we had our house doctor come, you know, Dr. Kovac. And he always took care of anybody that had any illness, and he took care of everybody. And so he came and checked me, and I didn't get any better. Mm-hmm. And so Dr. Kovac said, I made a mistake. I didn't understand what your daughter had. And he brought in Dr. Pellegrini, which was the head of the Lutheran Hospital. And he said that I had tuberculosis. So I was hospitalized, and they put me in a room with two old men that were barely living. And I threw a fit. I was good at throwing fits. I ended up in a private room. And I didn't eat that soup and stuff that they served. So my mother had to bring it in every day and read to me. And then they brought in from the University Hospital in Vienna, the head of it. And they put me behind a screen, and they came and looked at it and whatever, and then they left. And no one had ever had a white smoker, and no, nothing else, no lead apron. They left, and I got pretty cold and standing behind there, and they just had, so I went around, I wanted to see what they saw. And of course, I couldn't see anything. But anyway, it was decided that I couldn't lose any weight. I had to gain weight. I had to drink shot glass of olive oil. And if I couldn't stand it anymore, then, you know, like a pork roast, the grease from pork roast, that. And gold pills. And my parents wanted to send me to Davos, because that's where all the people went with tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. And just when they were going to send me, the Swiss finally closed their borders. Mm-hmm. Before that, they did business with the Nazis like crazy. I never forget that. And so my father found some farmers that had an apple orchard, and he got, I don't know what kind of a deal he had. Anyway, he built a kind of a barracks type structure on it. And it had a balcony that I slept on a balcony so that I get fresh air and no sun. Because that was the best they could do. And we had a wood stove or coal stove or whatever, I can't recall anymore. And the farmer gave me some chicks And so I brought their chickens home. And they grew up and they would sit on my...
your arms.
And I had apple crates, you know, for them to make nests. And my father brought marble tops, table tops from the hotel that we had on the terrace for flooring.
Oh, my heavens. Wow.
But anyway, I survived, mm-hmm. you know. My mother was, in the meantime, was just pregnant with my kid sister. There was 12 years of difference between wow. me and my, and 16 years between my
your older sister.
Older sister. And she wouldn't call.
So your younger sister was just a little thing then when the war came.
She wasn't touched. Totally different upbringing, totally right. different everything.
Wow. Amazing.
Huh. Well, I think, you know, I was so ill that my parents brought, mm-hmm. you know, no one knew.
Right. Tuberculosis was a big killer.
Well, I was cured mm-hmm. with gold pills and all that stuff.
Yes.
Which nowadays, they say it's worse than not. You know, it depends which report you read. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, I missed a lot of school. I just missed 3 years of schooling.
Wow.
So I had to make all that up.
Right.
But after the war, it was easy because all the teachers that were in the Nazi party let go.
Oh. Okay. Wow.
So... Yeah, like I had a teacher, she's for history and geography, and she was European history, she was great. Mm-hmm. But you know, she came one day and she said, I have to show you something. That was after the war. And she lifted up her dress and she had a belt underneath it and she had a pink flannel mm-hmm. Nightgown. And she got a Caritas package.
She got a what?
Caritas.
Okay.
Package, a relief package.
A relief package, okay.
And she was so thrilled. Yeah. It was just such a great thing. But, you know, for months and we had no coal. Mm-hmm. We couldn't heat. We had... even after the war.
Right.
And electricity only for a few hours. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you want a break here then, Renee?
Yeah.
Is that good? Because then we can, when we resume, we can talk about after the war.
Yeah.
Okay then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.